it's not easy. It's never easy. It is work every day, but it's work we love to do. It is, businesses sometimes last longer than actual marriages do. So we knew that going into it, and that's our intention. So we had to set some parameters, but you know what? Those vows actually, some of them could be the same that we would still abide by today. And but we've grown so much, we've changed so much that it is constant work for us to ensure that we are honoring the thing that is what got us started, which is our friendship, and recognizing that as our business changes, our friendship changes. And how do we maneuver that? How do we at the again make considered decisions, make intentional decisions, and not just wake up in 5 years and go, how did we get here?
Certified career strategist, leadership and sales coach with 10 plus years of experience helping high performing teams and individuals figure out their careers. Welcome to the Spotlight Project, where we'll be listening to a one-time, raw and unfiltered career conversation of everyday people willing to share their stories. This podcast is being recorded on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Spotlight Project, the podcast designed to spotlight people's unique career stories. I'm your host, Diana, as you know, and I'm so excited today because I'm here with Vivian McCormick. She's going to do a little bit of an intro to herself in a second, but lawyer turned entrepreneur, co-founder of Flax Home, a Canadian retail company, seriously taking over the linen essentials space. I know she's laughing, but it's true. It's world domination of the linens. But welcome, Viv.
Thank you. I'm really so nice to be here.
It's so nice to have you here. You're like an icon to me.
Okay.
To be you.
Sure.
She's like, sure, whatever.
Girl, we got to talk about your aspirations.
Maybe we should bring it down a notch. So Viv, can you give the audience a bit of an introduction to yourself? So your name, your pronouns, and what it is you do today. How do you describe that?
Okay. My name is Vivian McCormick. My pronouns are she, her. And what do I do today? Today specifically was photo shoot day, actually. But no, I am, I think you might have said, a recovering lawyer. Someone else on the radio the other day called himself a lapsed lawyer, which I thought was kind of hilarious. Like, I've lapsed. No, I am a recovering lawyer and turned entrepreneur, which is another weird title that I don't know that 10 years ago I ever would have thought I would call myself. I am one of the co-founders. I'm one of three co-founders of Flax Home. We are a digitally native retailer of linen home goods. We started in bedding and we expanded into bath products and also into kitchen products in 2020 of all years. But it has been one of the wildest rides, something so cool I'm excited to tell you all about. And that's my day. Like, those are my day to day is different every day now because of being in this business as opposed to my lawyering.
Your lawyering, exactly. Well, yeah. We're going to get into all that juicy stuff. So how you started with two of your friends, what the ride has felt like, the wild ride, and how you got to where you are today. But before we get into all that stuff, because that's very much your present. But you've had a whole past, a whole career you built before you started running this business. So where I like to start with people is before I talk about your job, because so much of who we are is defined by your job, I kind of want to meet you as a person first. So can you talk a little bit about your upbringing? And here's why I want to go there is I feel like a lot of the values or the way we're raised just generally tend to carry with us as we make choices in our career. So you don't have to go deep into when you were born and where you're born and all that kind of stuff. But more just generally, like, what do you remember about growing up, how you were raised, some of the things that were instilled in you that you think have been pretty monumental in your career?
There are a lot. I mean, first of all, I have the spottiest memory. So like people who say that they can remember what they were doing when they were five, I'm like, are you lying? There's no way.
Oh, they're lying. They're lying.
Yeah. Right. It's just things you've seen in pictures, but, yes. So I am the elder of two children. My parents immigrated to Canada during their university years. So my mom came from Hong Kong. My dad came from Singapore. And I was born here. My brother was born here. So we've grown up in the Greater Vancouver area. My dad is a professional, and so that was definitely something that was really instilled in us from young, you know, go get a professional degree and nobody can take that away from you once you have it, and you know, you'll have a great life and a great career after that, you know, simple. And I followed that path. I definitely, you know, medicine, dentistry, law,
classic,
accounting, engineering. I like narrowly passed accounting in business school. And so that was out. And I fell in love actually with this one course I took third year in my business degree that was about collective bargaining. So, you know, unions. And what I sort of loved about it is that I had been reading all these textbooks, and then this particular course involved reading cases. So I read arbitration cases, which are similar to court cases, but, you know, about unions and about people who are unionized workers. And it dawned on me at that point that I think I'd thought about law before, but that was like the first clear path, I think, to say, oh, maybe there is something that I see here that I want to do. You know, maybe I want to work in labor law. So employment, unions, that kind of thing. And so I followed the professional path. I went to law school. I got the job afterwards to do the articling. Worked at the big firm for a number of years.
Did all the lawyer things.
Did all the lawyer things. I lawyered a lot. And yeah, I don't know. You may ask further questions about this, but I can tell you, you know, I got about 5 years in, and the way I saw my life going at that point was just a certain way. It would have been still a lot of hours that were not really up to my control. A lot of evenings and just an unpredictability, because I'm no stranger to long hours even today, but the unpredictability and the lack of control were kind of the hard things to wrap my mind around how to live the rest of my life. So, you know, I had envisioned having a family and, you know, all of these other things. And I started to think about whether or not my personality was actually going to be suited to being able to live my life, live my professional aspirations, and have all of those two things blend together in a way that was sustainable for me. And my conclusion for my personal, you know, self was that I actually didn't think I could do it in a way that I'd be happy with at the end of the day.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I just didn't want to put my head down and 10 or 20 or 30 years later, look up and wonder how I was still doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
You know, that was the thing, is I just started to question it, and the questions got louder and got to a point where I was trying to work out, you know, I didn't really want to jump. I mean, law is a profession where there are not a lot, at least at the time when I was there, not a lot of women in sort of the more senior roles. You see a lot of women exit to other jobs, still in law or not in law at all. And I just couldn't really see a path for myself. But at the same time, I'd worked really hard and I didn't want to jump. Like, I didn't want to leave because I couldn't do it. I knew I could do it. It was an intentional choice that I wanted to make. And it took a minute to see a path. And the path I saw actually was, after talking to a lot of people who had found alternative careers in law or outside of law. I did see a path, and that path involved wanting to understand more about how law and business really work together. Most of my legal career was getting instructions from a client on something they had already decided they were going to do, and I just had to do the paperwork. But I wanted to better understand how businesses were making those decisions, and I wanted to be there for part for those decisions. So I actually ended up going to work for a bank, and I was their lawyer. I was one of their lawyers. It was a legal team of about probably 15 lawyers across the country. But it was also, it's a bank, Business Development Bank of Canada. It is the federally supported development bank for the country. So the goals are simply to support entrepreneurs, get money out to entrepreneurs. And I didn't think much of it at the time. I thought, great, you know, legal job that I can go to, figure out how law and business intersect at a very well-established organization.
Mm-hmm.
Good next step, frankly, a step that I could justify to my parents. You know, I'm going to leave my big law firm job where I'm on track to make partner. I'm going to go do that. I'm going to leave that, and I'm going to go somewhere where I have a pension. Yay. And
yes. You know, like, compromise, mom and dad.
Totally. Yeah. And like, you don't have to worry about me. And so that was my next step.
Makes sense. Can I ask, because I mean, the way you tell it, obviously it's a accelerated timeline.
Yeah.
In which all this...
in like 4 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. But can I ask, because I feel like a lot of people sort of struggle with how quickly they want to make sort of that transition once they make a decision to leave or transition or do something. So for you, can you walk me through just how long it takes? Because it sounds like the pathing was gradual. It's not like you woke up one day and was like, okay, I'm going to leap now and figure that out. Or is that how that happened for you?
No, I'm not a leaper. I'm the kind of person, if you ask my husband, he will tell you, like, I need to know all the things. I need to see all the things. I need to see all the options. Good thing he's like that too. Otherwise we probably drive each other crazy, but I need to see what's out there. I need to think about it and then know that I've made a very considered decision. And so it does take a while. And when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do next, like I said, I really went and talked to a lot of people. I go into these modes, actually, I think in when I'm in discovery mode about something I want to change about my life, I get into this gear of, you know, seeking out and taking all the meetings. I don't usually prejudge a conversation with someone, whether I'm going to get anything out of it or not, because I'm almost certain every time I'm going to leave with one additional tidbit that I can add onto this layer of my consideration. Mm. So I took a lot. I reached out, I talked to people, I sought other people out. I used my community to, be connected with people who could help me learn and piece together this puzzle of what I was thinking about doing. And what's also funny is that a lot of times things that would be in my mind, I would think were just completely brand new thoughts and ideas that, you know, no one else has ever experienced. And I very quickly learned that a lot of people have experienced these things. And why reinvent the wheel? Why not talk to people who have experienced the same thoughts, the same wishes about their career that you have, and just see where they landed and see how that's serving them. And so I take a lot of meetings. I ask a lot of people to go for coffee with me and pick their brain. And it's partially I'm really also inclined to do that for others when they reach out, because I had a lot of people do that for me. And so that first move took some time. I talked to people in high up legal careers in corporations. I talked to people who worked in government, just kind of figured out how I wanted to proceed. The second move I made, from working as an in-house lawyer at a bank to wanting to be a consultant, really, in the business realm, that took me a while as well. And it was this time, yes, still talking to a lot of people, but like podcasts had become a thing. And I was listening to like the Startup Podcast and all of these other ones that really got my brain, like how I built this and all of this other stuff. And I was just, at the time, I actually still never thought about being an entrepreneur myself. I thought more about being a consultant to entrepreneurs, because I didn't really think I had the heart for it or the stomach for it, to be honest.
I was going to say, were you questioning if you could do the work?
Totally. I was actually, I think it was like questioning whether I had this, when you go through this much education to get a law degree and you come out of it being very skilled in some ways, but what I was always also fearing was that I didn't know a lot of things in order to do anything other than law. Imposter syndrome, right? So yeah, I still just at that point thought, well, maybe I can be a consultant. I thought about whether I remember talking to our good friend Matt and said, you know, I don't think I can coach. Like, I don't think it's that, but I do think that I can help. I've always wanted to help people. I think law was like that too. That's partially what got me there, but I've always wanted to help. So when I wanted to think about going into consulting, I had recognized in working for a bank that was supporting entrepreneurs, how many entrepreneurs struggled with actually running their business in a way that will allow them to grow. So like, what the heck do I know about that? But at the same time, like I knew that I have a pretty methodical way of looking at things. And so if I could come into your business and kind of analyze what you were doing or not doing, or what you were burying your head in the sand about, I could kind of help turn that around, and then you're good. And I'm off to the next one. So I started that. That's what I left law to do. And that one was a harder one, really, for like my parents. Even my husband at the time, like he's still my husband, sorry. At the time, my husband, but at the
sorry,
time,
Dave.
That discussion was, a very interesting one, right? I mean, for those of you who know him, Dave is also a lawyer, and he completely understood why I wanted to make a transition, but also trying to figure out for myself what that next step was. I think for him watching it would have been, he says he was super inspired by it, but I'm sure at some times where I would be going off in all these different directions thinking like, what am I going to do next? It's probably a little, it's challenging to watch it from the outside. Right.
So was it like a freelance consulting was essentially what you're doing? Oh, okay.
Yeah. And again, I'm not a leaper. So my first role coming out of the bank was actually to go into like quite a full-time role as a consultant. So just kind of embed myself within a business that was just starting up, and it was in law. So I understood it. I was helping to start up a law firm. So I understood the operations piece of it, and I understood the law. So that, I think, served me well to work on the projects that needed to be worked on there. Very safe, right? Like of all the jumps to make, like to jump as a consultant, to go work in the same industry that you were always working in, not huge, but big for me, I think. And, but it wasn't long after that, that this idea for Flax came up. And at the time, I had dipped my toe right into the world of people starting businesses. And I had started to talk with some people about their own businesses and kind of coaching them through, frankly, the very technical things that I understand, which is like how to incorporate a business, how to keep your bank account for your business separate from your personal, all of those things that nobody really wants to do. But I could do that part. And so people would come to me and say, hey, if I want to start this, what are the things I need to think about? And I could do that. And then when Flax came up, there were so many compelling reasons to do it. But one of them for me was this idea of, you know, I think you can't coach until you do. So until you've really seen a business through from beginning to end, whatever end might look like, how are you supposed to talk people through what the parts that they're going to find difficult, right?
100%. So. So, I mean, all these sort of the way you describe the decisions you made, it all makes sense to me. Like if you know yourself to be a little bit more of a risk averse individual, yeah. but it makes yeah. sense.
Yeah.
You're going to make choices that still feel safe enough for you, but have enough of the risk for you to feel like you're making a change. Right. So Correct. It sounds like that's very much how you thought about things yeah. as you were moving through. Okay. Absolutely. With Dave watching on the side being like, what are you doing?
What about that pension?
So true.
He never said that to me. He was always like, you go do you. And he was amazing about it.
I know.
It.
I'm sure he was. I want Dave, if you're listening to this, I'm going to have you on the podcast. Don't you worry, my brother.
And as far as winding paths of careers, I mean, he is like what he has done. We'll talk about this offline, but what he's done in the last 18 months is incredible.
It's insane. I bet. Okay. Yeah. I'll add them to my list.
You.
But back to you.
Yes, me. Right.
Ken, so for the inception of Flax, mm-hmm. can you talk me through how this idea even got seed planted? So you got to a point where you're like, okay, I need to feel what it's like to do a business, to actually consult people who run small businesses. But how did the idea even get incepted? What were the early phases? Give me that story.
So there were nights, and I say nights because that's usually when I'd be sitting in my old law office by myself, and I'd be thinking about things that I could invent in order to get the heck out of Dodge of this legal life. That was like 10 years ago. I would never be brave enough to do any of those things, right? This time around, it wasn't my idea. My business partner, Anna, who at the time was running Bell Cafe in the Hotel Georgia and had become a really good friend, brought this idea to our other business partner, Juana, and myself. And it was out of a personal need, which is a lot of times how you see businesses get started. Somebody recognizes a problem, a gap in the market, and then they think, I could either do this because there's a gap, or I can do it better than what's currently out there. So for us, she brought us the challenge she was having, which was finding linen, specifically linen. And this is a thing that we could talk for hours about, but linen and linens are different, right? So bed linens in the general sense, different from what we do, which is linen bedding. And linen is made from a flax plant. That's why we're called flax. And Anna has always had a really deep understanding of natural fibers for her clothing and household goods. And so when she was looking for new bedding, she wanted linen. She's a hot sleeper. Linen is very breathable. And she knew she wanted something that wasn't like this Egyptian cotton high thread count, like suffocation, you know, tool for her. So she wanted linen bedding, and she brought this challenge to us and said, listen, she bought a mattress online, and it was like this wonderful experience, right? Go on, pick what you need. It gets sent to your door, poof, box arrives. And when she went to find bedding was not as simple to find. There was the online options that were mostly outside of Canada. So by the time you factored in duties and shipping, and if you don't like it, sending it back and losing that, you know, the duties and shipping that you've paid for, it was sort of cost prohibitive to order from outside of the country. And then she tried to go to, you know, medium to large stores to look for specifically linen bedding. Nothing was really available at a price point that made sense, you know. And then I think she even went to try to get it custom made, and like no small bedding places were even entertaining the idea of doing that. So she comes to us and says, listen, I can't find what I'm looking for. And Juana and I, at that time did a lot more online shopping than Anna did. Anna is like a boutique, you know, patron, and knows all of these amazing brands that we don't have any clue about. And so we were just like, well, you just don't online shop, like leave it with us. We'll find you what you need. This is kind of what we do for fun. So we go away, we look, and she's not wrong, right? You're right. We can't find what you're looking for here in Canada. So, okay, what do you think? Like, and this is not the first idea that Anna had brought to us. And most of the time we're like, no, not that. No. Mm-mm. And so this time when she brought it to us, she's like, well, and we kind of went, actually, you might have something here. So down the road, search out suppliers, find samples, order samples, receive them, love them, and decide, all right, well, you know what? We're going to go and look at a factory now, because Juana also comes from a legal background. And between the two of us, you know, we thought we would end up with a shipping container full of sand if we didn't actually go and see the factory that we were.
Trust was low,
you know, especially because we found our manufacturers the way that everyone finds manufacturers these Google. Days, I think, Google, mm-hmm. The intertubes. And so, yeah, 4 months after having that first conversation about this business, we were on a plane to Hong Kong, my mom's hometown, and one of my favorite places. And we grabbed an Airbnb there. It was the shortest trip. Like the amount of time we spent in the air was probably like half the total amount of time we spent in Hong Kong. And
it's crazy.
Right. And so we were in Hong Kong, we grabbed an Airbnb. We did one day where we went into Shenzhen. So to go meet our potential supplier. We spent the whole day there and flew home. It was nuts. It was insane. I think it was like, we took like long weekends basically and went to Asia.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And we also, while we were there, did a whole ton of business planning. We just mapped it all out. Anything that wasn't already in the works, we sat down and really worked on. We wrote founders' vows because we realized that we were entering a territory of, it's not a transition, it was like an entering a territory of friends going into business together.
Yeah.
And we knew each other so well, and we know each other a lot better now, but we knew each other quite well at the time. And we knew how to push some buttons and, you know, how to get under each other's skin. And when we started to have to make what we thought at the time were hard decisions, they're a lot harder these days, but the decisions we had to make at the time, we started to realize that we had ways of, you know, personally knowing what the other people were thinking. We needed to figure out a way to take this into a business context and still remain authentic to our friendship, but also agree that our friendship comes first.
Yes. So it's like you're leading me down the path I want to go, which is awesome. Can we put a pin in that friendship business merger for a second? I just want to go back. I definitely want to come back to that, but I want to go back to just more maybe the emotional back end, the conversations offline that no one would have seen or have heard of except the three of you, as you were flying to Hong Kong, coming home with samples, creating the business plan. Like, what was the vibe? Like, what was the feelings? Like, what were the things you guys were talking through? Because you make it sound so simple to execute and activate, but frankly, it's difficult for people to even start.
It is difficult. I think, you know, for one, like you just touched on it, what were the conversations? Well, they were conversations amongst three people, as opposed to conversations you may be having with yourself about trying to start a thing, or with one other person. Like, we really had a great ability to drive each other through the harder parts at that time of starting something. But I think this is for me. I mean, other people are suited differently, but like starting something is not easy, but there is a excitement to it. New things are fun. Shiny things are fun. And launching something is nothing compared to like scaling it afterwards. You know, we set out to just try a thing and see what happened and sell 200 sets of sheets. And you know what, if nothing happens, then we all go home and go back to our jobs, whatever. And when we realize like, no, this is actually a thing, then it gets real. Like,
yeah.
Okay. So going back to your question about like, what are those conversations like? There's a hilarious conversation, which probably wasn't that hilarious at the time, but we're going through samples and we're literally talking about what shade of white we're going to carry. And those two will make fun of me till the day I die about this. But like, I don't know. I'm good at some things, but like picking colors of things, don't leave that with me. So, you know, we were talking about these different shades of white. And I think finally, because we came up with like, in these discussions, when we find ourselves going round and round and round, we came up with like a word where one person would say it and would just like stop the discussion just to like everybody take a breath. And so I think that happened at some point. I was like, oh my gosh, like enough already with these whites. Like I can't even anymore. Just pick one. I don't care. So that happened, you know, going through a whole bunch of samples in an Airbnb in the middle of Hong Kong. Like what a random thing to be doing. You know, our brand and website development were in play at the time. So, you know, we were looking at like mock-ups of a website, like talking about aesthetically what we wanted to see there and designing this thing that we also were just so nervous to put out into the world. Like the day we flipped the switch, you just like want to absolutely barf, right?
Yeah.
And thankfully, I think our business is at the top of the list of things that keep us going is community. And launching this business relied so heavily on community that while it was so scary, it was also like we had just like everybody kind of doing whatever they could to hold us up. Another reason why, you know, it's really important to us to give back in that sense. When we talk to other people about starting businesses, we would be nowhere today without the continued help of people all along the way, the time.
Just the support mechanisms. That makes so much sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So question, this is really important. What color white did you guys land on? Was it eggshell? I didn't even know there's different shades of white. Isn't white just white?
Oh girl. My gosh. Have you like going to a paint store? It is craziness.
Okay, I rent, so I've never painted my place. So I wouldn't
know. That's good.
Well, yeah. But what white did you guys end up with?
So we are our cloud, which is one of three colors that we started with when we launched. So cloud, this is how important it was, right? There were only three colors. You got to really be careful about it. Is a true white.
Like a stark white.
Yeah, it is white.
Yeah. White. White. Like angel white.
Correct. To mirror its co-founders. Absolutely.
So good. I love it. Okay, cool. And not to go off the serious.
No.
That was really an important question because it sounded like it was such a debate. But you talked about community, talked about preserving your friendship while blending the business. So to go back to that a little bit, was it tough blending the business and the friendship, or because you guys made the vows, it was less tough?
No, not at all. It's not easy. It's never easy. It is work every day. But it's work we love to do. It is, you know, businesses sometimes last longer than actual marriages do. So we knew that going into it, and that's our intention. So we had to set some parameters, but you know what? Those vows, actually, some of them could be the same that we would still abide by today. But we've grown so much. We've changed so much that it is constant work for us to ensure that we are honoring the thing that is what got us started, which is our friendship. And recognizing that as our business changes, our friendship changes. And how do we maneuver that? How do we make considered decisions, make intentional decisions, and not just wake up in 5 years and go, How did we get here? No idea, right? So we took, 2020 was a very interesting year in that when COVID started, I just had Declan, our son, and we also faced down the possibility of like, what happens if this pandemic means that nobody shops ever again? I mean, fast forward, you know, spoiler alert, that the opposite happened. But we did have a moment where we thought about like, what happens, how long can we run this before things kind of really take a turn? And we got through that piece. And in the middle of one of like the busiest year we'd had to date at that time, we also knew that it was time to grow a team, and that to grow a team, we needed to be ready as leaders to, you know, be great examples for that team. So we actually engaged a coach who worked with the three of us. And individually, but the main mandate was to work with the three of us to get to a point where we felt even better and stronger about our business, and more importantly, about working with each other so that we could lead a team.
What was, I'm just curious with this coach, what was the content? Was it business modeling, but also interest?
No, none of it. It was
none of it. Okay.
All interpersonal. It was all interpersonal.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, you know, because I think for people who know us, you know, you wouldn't be surprised to know, like, we can always learn about more financial modeling, more ways to scale the business, more ways to grow. But at the time in 2020, that part we weren't struggling with. And we weren't struggling with the interpersonal either. But what we knew is that if we were to really grow this thing, it was going to take a bit of a leveling up of our personal skill set to be leaders. Because we knew, like, it's not just going to be the three of us anymore doing everything. There's going to be people who rely on us, who we rely on. And we wanted to be the best that we could be for them. That is also constant work, because, you know, we're like, yeah, we're not, it is so much work to really show up properly for people.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And, you know, the more people you add, the more you realize, you know, you got to show up differently for different people. And what does that look like while also trying to run a business?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yes. What personally for you has come out of those coaching sessions, or as you've scaled your team, that's been a big learning?
I came from a career where your productivity was directly linked to your value and your worth. So the billable hour, for anybody who's familiar with it. It is something that is very hard to unlearn. And my biggest learning at the outset of that coaching, as we worked through it, was that I really linked my productivity and other people's productivity, and I think maybe more specifically our work product and the volume of work product, to be the sole determinant of my worth, my value as a contributor, as a business owner, as a person. It's not like I didn't know that that's how I am, but to really face down that, listen, just because you knocked everything off a list you made, and just because you worked a 12, 14 hour day, actually gives no greater value than if you had achieved X, Y, and Z for the business, or even like took some time to sit down and think about a particular problem that may not actually have a resolution at the outcome of that, at the end of that hour you take. But I really struggled with it. Like, it leads you to only doing things you know how to do, because you're good at it and you're fast and you're efficient and you can be like, bang, 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 I did all these things. And being an entrepreneur, I think it's like 99% not knowing what you're doing. So taking the time to learn something about building the business, even though it doesn't have a specific outcome that you can hold up to everyone else as being something you did, that's actually more valuable most of the time than the things you can hold up as being the emails you sent, the thing, you know, like the list is endless. But my point is that I learned, and it's again constant work, that just because you're maybe the last person online, because now we all work from wherever, but just because you're the one sending emails the latest or whatever, like it is no reflection upon how hard you're working versus someone else.
Oh my gosh, you're saying things. I mean, on a personal level, I've been feeling all these things. Yeah. But yeah. It's I think it's true of, I mean, you tell me, but there's a couple of layers here probably that contribute to this. I think.
So many.
Right. Like you're probably your conditioning, being a lawyer, billable hours, that all makes sense. Probably naturally who you are as a personality makes sense. High achieving, high functioning. Mm-hmm. I would also probably assume, like, and again, I'm making an assumption here, but like Asian backgrounds too, like growing up with immigrant parents. I mean, that's a very ingrained thing, but you say such an interesting piece about sometimes seeing like a tangible outcome is not a direct reflection of your worth, your value, of the amount of good work that you're doing. Sometimes it's the intangible things that matter more. Right? The
quiet work too.
The quiet work. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we have a hard time dedicating any energy or time or being okay with doing that kind of work sometimes, right?
Yeah, it is. It goes against a lot of what we, you know, you may, like me for sure, maybe you have been taught. And yeah, it's constant unlearning for sure.
How do you work through it? Do you just try and slow down or like remind yourself to slow down sometimes?
Yeah, I recognize, you know, again, I am older now.
A lot wiser.
Yeah, sure. No, definitely not. But older and actually more able to recognize the signs, like physiological signs in my body. So this pit of my stomach feeling when I would be reading or thinking about something that I didn't know how to do, or that I was trying to work through a particular challenge, the pit of my stomach, the feeling in the pit of my stomach I would get would actually be this like nervous energy kind of telling me like, you're not doing this fast enough. And actually having to stop, like think on it and go, no, this isn't something you're supposed to be able to do fast. So like, shut up, stomach, just sit down and don't think about how long this is taking and think about what it is you're trying to achieve here or what progress you're trying to make. This is even like, I stop myself from saying achieve because that again is outcome based. What progress are you trying to make on a particular challenge? Stop thinking about whether or not you're going to be able to hold up a result. Just think about exactly what the problem is and how you're going to go about solving it.
Totally. I think you say like really powerful things in here that probably resonate with a lot of people. And I have a little sentence on my computer that's like, calm the fuck down.
Oh my God.
Whenever you get those, like the pit in the stomach, you're not doing enough. You're not pushing fast enough.
Breathe.
Yeah. I think it's such a good point. And it's nice hearing from you because whether you're a lawyer running your own business or just a contributor working at a company, I mean, I think this is all really good insight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's, that was great. I love that we went there. What's next for Flack? So you guys are talking about growing, scaling, having more visibility in the market. Yeah. But what's next when you think about the future of your business?
Gosh, so many things are next. I mean, right in front of us, the most imminent thing is a new showroom here in Vancouver.
So excited.
We have the privilege to live and work. And, you know, we're opening that up in mid-October. We are growing geographically. We are pushing into the US and trying to go get market there. We are growing from a product standpoint, you know, really dialing in on what it is we've done so far, how to make it better, what do our customers want that they haven't seen yet from us, how do we do that the best way possible. And then, you know, part of this business for all of us, I think, is really also creating a great place to work for more and more people. And so I want to grow our team because I think we can go farther, faster. We are at a point now, we're long past the point of three of us doing all of the stuff ourselves. And we have just some amazing people who can take this jumbled set of thoughts in our brains sometimes and turn it into what you're seeing right now, you know, that we're putting out there. So I'm super grateful to them all the time. And I want there to be more of them because I think it's a cool place to work. I think one thing I'm really proud of all the time is that we have the ability and to build a business that we manage in a way that perhaps we weren't given that same environment in some of the places that we've worked in the past. And this is like, people ask me about, you know, when should they start a business? Should they I would say relatively nowadays, like in startup world, we started our business late in our lives, right? Like mid-30s, what is that? But still, a lot of people are starting businesses straight out of school. And I think that's like, I think it's inspiring. And a lot of days I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so behind these kids. But coming from a corporate background and spending 10 years in two of the most, what's the best word for it? Like two of the longest standing industries being law and banking. Coming from that world, both of those worlds, I will never regret the time I've spent there because it shapes the way that we run our business today.
100%.
So many ways, both positive and negative, right? Like we do want to do it this way. We don't want to do it that way. And that, that is so valuable to me personally. So I'm happy that we started it after having a bit of that experience under our belts, you know?
I totally agree. And I think even too, probably like the technical knowledge, the structural knowledge, how like business units operate, like all that stuff that you learn in the corporate background is actually really important when you're starting the building blocks of your business. And I think particularly too, as you scale and start hiring people on, having to build out like a people development and a culture function. Like if you do business right out of school, you don't know how to build those things for a team. Yeah,
or you'll learn, but you'll really learn on the fly.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah, exactly. So I agree with you. It's probably really shaped the way the three of you run your business now, which is great. Yeah,
definitely.
So just more to come from Flax Home.
So much more. It's not quiet.
It's not quiet. My God. It's gonna be exciting to see what happens to the business in the next 2 to 3 years for sure.
Yeah. And what's crazy is let's see, it started actually about 4 years ago now. So 2017 in the fall in September. And here we are in 2021. And, you know, 4 years in a lot of ways feels like a long time. It also feels like no time at all. When you think about running your business and how long that trajectory is, and what different scenarios will lead to what, you know, how that, what, where you go. When you say 2 to 3 years, in some ways I react by going, oh my God, that's so long. But then also like, that could be no time at all. We're going to blink and 2 to 3 years passes. So it's cool. It's nuts. Like I think about when we first started the business, I thought to myself, ooh, I need to record like I need to basically like, you know, dear diary about my business, about our business, and like, make sure I keep writing down all these things. And now it's like 4 years later and there's things that I can't remember because so much has happened. Somebody asked me at the end of the summer, like, oh, how was your summer? And part of me was like, oh, it was quiet. But I was like, no, it wasn't. We moved into a way bigger warehouse and office space, and we have this showroom starting, and like, it's not quiet. What are you talking about? But I don't know. I'm just conditioned to think that like, we're not doing enough ever.
I know, it's crazy. You know what you guys should do? I'm now like giving you a freebie consulting tip is if you don't already, you should build in some quarterly like retros, like places where you guys can document some of this stuff. Cause I think it's really magical. Some of the learning you can capture, and you don't want to forget these things as you grow and scale.
That organizational brain, like the actual brain of the organization, the learnings you can take out of it. Like when you, that's a classic thing I think for entrepreneurs is like, go, go, go forward, forward, forward. You're not looking back that often and you're not taking the time to celebrate ever.
Yes.
But, right. So like, yes, I think that's a great idea and something that we need to take more time to do. You know, we never do because we think we don't have time for this. But it's not that you don't have time. It's that you're not prioritizing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I even the biggest businesses do that, like quarterly retro. Oh, and three of you can sit down over dinner and like three bottles of wine and
done,
you know, done. There you go. Done. Quarterly review.
Great. Amazing. Done. Check.
Yeah. I love it. And I will also join, even though I'm not part of the company.
We'll have to come to the quarter. Cause after I have three bottles of wine, we're not going to remember anything we said anyway.
Yeah, exactly. All right, but we don't have, every session or every sort of interview and conversation, we never have enough time to go into all the things I want. But we're sort of nearing the end of this. And I kind of want to ask more like lightning round questions to just sum up all the juice from this conversation. So the first is, what do you feel like has always been true about the way you've made choices in your career and will just continue to be true moving forward?
One of the things that I think about at pivotal points is almost everything is reversible, if that makes sense. Like when I was getting ready to leave law, I thought to myself, listen, you can come back here if you need to. Yeah, it's going to take some steps and, you know, whatever. But if you decide to come back, you can come back. And if you don't ever leave, how are you going to know if you wanted to come back or not? So I think of a lot of things as, you know, when I'm evaluating a decision, it's like, what's the word? Like, can you undo it in some way? Like, if the answer is yes, that kind of is a tick in the column of maybe you should go try that. You know,
so totally.
That's something that has cropped up a number of times in my life. And I very quickly after leaving law was like, no, you're never going back there. Mm-mm, no, but I had to tell myself that I could if I wanted to, because of just my reluctance sometimes to take that leap.
It was your safety net. It makes sense. Yeah, no. But it's a good point that most choices are reversible.
Yeah, especially in your career, right? Like in life, less so. But in your career, yeah, you know, you can find another job. That's the other thing I told myself. It's like when I decided to not be an employee anymore, I knew that it might be challenging afterwards, but I could find another job if I needed to do that.
So, yeah, you're employable. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's so true. And I feel like that's why a lot of people hesitate, not just for the corporate to entrepreneur leap, but for any leap, right? I want to move industries. I want to switch jobs. It's always, can I come back? And the answer is usually yes. Mm-hmm. So usually. Yeah. That's a really good insight. What have you been most proud of? I feel like you left nuggets along the trail, but if you were to pick one thing you're most proud of, what is it?
I am currently most proud of our ability to lead a business ourselves, like a female-led business, and scale it and grow it beyond, what I try not to read them very much, but all of the stats about female-led businesses not exceeding a certain amount of revenue ever, never lasting past 5 years, like all of that stuff. I don't read it, but I do know that we have probably surpassed quite a few barriers and hurdles that not all businesses do. I'm really proud of that. And I'm proud of the fact that throughout all of that, we have worked really hard to help the people in our community or not in our community yet, you know, but people we meet along the way, we've worked really hard to make that possible for others.
Totally. Giving back. I think that's huge. Yeah. Oh, these are so good. I don't want to stop. Okay. What do you, again, you've given a little bit of this, but just personally, what are you continuing to work on? Maybe a self-doubt or something that's constantly plaguing you?
How much time do you have? Right now, the thing I'm working on is to trust myself. Because the decisions that we face these days are not ones that have clear A, B, even C answers. And they come with a lot of uncertainty. And at a certain point, all we have left is to like trust our gut. And again, like I also fall back on the like, well, a lot of these things are reversible, or you can undo them, or you can figure it out if you need to. But trust the decision you want to make. And then figure out how to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great one too. And the, I think the final and most pivotal question for me in every single one of these conversations, because the reason why I did this is to share people's career stories with others who's feeling stuck or scared or worried about a transition or a irreparable choice, right? Mm-hmm. So if someone comes to you, or when people come to you and just say, I'm stuck, or I don't know what I'm doing, or I'm scared to do this, what do you usually tell people to get them out of that rut?
Ooh, I don't know if it ever gets them out, but
or gives them a shovel or something.
If someone comes and says they're stuck, I find that sometimes the incremental steps can take you quite far. So we do this in the business as well. We ask ourselves, what is the next right thing to do? And if you're stuck in your career, you know, I think when I was listening to the episode you did with Matt, you know, it was really helpful to hear someone else say, listen, your passions can change. Your life circumstances can change. So what's the next right thing to get unstuck? And then what's the next right thing after that? And after that, and after that, and that little bit. And it's something I have to tell myself all the time too, right? Like, stop looking so far down the road and worrying about all the things. What's the first step to take in front of you? Take whatever, you know, hedging of your risk that you need to on that one. Sure. But do it. And then what's the next right one after that?
Yeah. The one choice in front of the other. Yeah.
Paralysis is the part that's like the decision paralysis is the part that can get people really, you know, in a rut.
Oh, totally.
Right.
They get stuck in all the what ifs, right? The what if scenarios, all of it. Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. So I see you stole someone else's advice. That's totally okay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to borrow Matt's. No problem. It's a good one though. And last question, but we've talked a lot about your professional life, which has obviously been fascinating. But what do you do when you're not running your own business? Where can we find you? What do you do?
Oh, what do I do? I right now try to spend much time as I can with my little fam, because I have what I feel are two toddlers in my life. A business toddler and a human toddler, and they both need things. And also they both are going to change in the blink of an eye. And if I don't take some time to pay attention and open my eyes and be present in both of those spaces, I'm just going to miss it all. So yeah, time with my fams, with my little fam and my extended family, actually. Like I, you know, this time, obviously the last 18 months has been a big eye opener in what is important and what you can and cannot kind of function without. And it's time with family, it's time with friends, and just trying to enjoy it, be present when you're there, get back to work when you do, be present when you're in work, you know, all the things that we have a hard time doing all the time, right?
Absolutely. I think that was lovely. That's a perfect way to end. The perfect way to end. So thanks so much, Viv, for being on here. And until next time, everyone.
My pleasure. Thanks.